This week's episode of the Sun on the Strip podcast is presented by Greenspun Media Group. Thanks for joining me. I'm Brock Radke, entertainment writer and columnist for the Las Vegas Sun. And I'm here every Wednesday to give you an update on all the entertainment news from the world-famous Las Vegas Strip, plus an exclusive conversation with someone you know or need to know in Vegas showbiz. Let me give a quick shout-out to the team at Las Vegas Weekly, which just finished this month's episode of the Second Helping Food podcast. I get to work on that show also with Genevieve Durano and Leslie Ventura. It's a lot of fun. It's all about restaurants and dining in Las Vegas. It definitely has a local vibe. So if you want to learn about not only hot new places to eat on and off the Strip, but also food trends making their way to Vegas, you need to check out Second Helping. It comes out every month at LasVegasWeekly.com, and you can also listen and subscribe on YouTube and Apple Podcasts. So on Friday afternoon, the Nevada Health Response Team sent out an unexpected announcement that the governor had just signed an emergency declaration updating COVID mitigation measures, and the one restriction that has probably caused the most challenging circumstances for some Strip live entertainment events and shows. It's the 25-foot rule, the requirement that showrooms and theaters maintain a 25-foot distance between the stage and the audience. I've talked about it here. I've written about it a lot. Many producers and operators have been lobbying for the state to reconsider this rule, and as of Friday, it's gone. The new restriction is that distance must be 12 feet, or it can be a minimum of 6 feet if the performers on stage are all wearing masks. So this is a big deal because it's going to allow some of the smaller theaters on the Strip and around Las Vegas to reopen or get more seats into the room and be able to continue their comebacks. Even though capacity numbers went up recently, some venues still couldn't get back to live performances because that rule, in addition to social distancing protocols, those things were keeping those numbers from rising to a point where it was financially sustainable to reopen a show. So now hopefully we're going to see more of these shows come back to life, especially after next week when on March 15th, the state is set to allow up to 50% capacity or 250 people for gatherings and events. It's really good news for the entertainment industry, and a lot of producers and performers are really happy right now and getting ready to help bring Vegas back. Of course, several shows were already planning to reopen this month. For example, the Australian Bee Gees show on the 15th at Excalibur, Absinthe on the 17th at Caesar's Palace, MJ Live at the Strat on the 18th, and David Copperfield at MGM Grand on the 21st. I've been keeping an eye on the V Theater at the Miracle Mile Shops at Planet Hollywood too, and there are three shows set to reopen there on March 26th. You can read more about that in this week's issue of Las Vegas Weekly magazine. Looking later into 2021, Resorts World is taking shape on the north end of the Strip. I just drove by it yesterday, and it's pretty exciting to see the other buildings taking shape in the shadows of that big red hotel tower. And we've had two food and beverage announcements for this new resort just in the past week. First, it was Wally's Wine and Spirits from Southern California, which will be leading the lineup with a huge restaurant, wine bar, and specialty market. And just a few days ago, Click Hospitality unveiled a few details for its new Gatsby's Cocktail Lounge planned for the Resorts World casino floor. Apparently, Gatsby's will be big on champagne, and I'm big on champagne, so that sounds pretty cool to me. Click, of course, operates several bars and restaurants on and off the Strip, including Click Lounge and the Barbershop at the Cosmopolitan. One more piece of F&B news on the Strip, Dunkin' Donuts is opening its first two shops there next month. They're both walk-up spots at the Link. One is right on the Strip, and the other is on the other end of the Link Casino leading into the Caesars Forum Convention Center. Dunkin' is planning to open more locations around town and on the Strip later this year. There's one more show reopening this month I didn't mention earlier, and it's Terry Fader at New York, New York, on March 18th. This one's a little different because the America's Got Talent champion turned Strip headliner has been starring in his own show at the Mirage for more than a decade. And last year, when COVID shut everything down, it also stalled his planned relocation to a new Strip venue. So he closed at the Mirage earlier than he wanted to, and then he was going to open with a holiday show at New York, New York, before COVID put a stop to that as well. But now the singer, comedian, and ventriloquist is finally coming back to the stage. He's doing it at the former home of Zoomanity at New York, New York. And this is a limited engagement, but don't be surprised if he ends up with a longer residency in this room at some point. Here's my Son on the Strip interview this week with Terry Fader.
You are finally getting to open this new show on March 18th at New York, New York. How are you feeling right now about this return, your return to the Vegas stage?
Oh my gosh, I am so excited about getting back on stage live. You know, this year is I've continued to be creative, but it's so much harder when you don't have a real live audience in front of you. And so it was such a disappointment for my last show at the Mirage to be just kind of, you go in on, you know, you do your thing on Thursday and then you come in and then you get a call Sunday night and say, the Vegas is canceled. It's all over. And so very frustrating. You know, we had this whole thing planned where I was going to move to New York, New York, and we were going to do a show on Thursday. And then I was going to open the next week at New York, New York, or possibly even do a show one night at the Mirage and then open it at New York, New York. And we were going to do all this, have moving trucks, with my posters on the side saying, Terry's moving, you know, and none of that got to happen. So
I remember last year it was kind of, up in the air. We didn't know where you were going to end up. You were looking for a new place to go. So you're saying that there were plans a long time ago to do some stuff at this new property.
Yes, there were. And what we started talking in maybe November of 2019 about the possibility of moving. And the reason I couldn't announce where it was going to be was that we had like three or four different venues that we were trying to kind of vet and find out which was going to be the best. And when they brought me the idea and they said, you know, would you like to move? I said, absolutely. I mean, 11 years at the Mirage, great, had a great time, great run. But I would love to get some new fresh blood and start in a new place. And this would be a lot of fun. And so we were just kind of going through and, you know, do you like this? And we were doing tours of theaters. And so once we decided, and I think it was, we didn't want to, until we had the, you know, everything inked, we didn't want to actually make a big announcement until everything was final. And so we didn't even get a chance to finish signing the contract before my show got canceled, you know, or Vegas got canceled, not my show. It was everything just shut down. And so it was like, well, geez. And then it was one of those things where you're like, oh, you know, maybe July, maybe August, maybe October, maybe January. And it was like, oh, when is this going to stop? And I did have fun, though. I got to do one of my lifelong dreams was to play comedy clubs. So over the summer, I got to play about four comedy clubs going around the country as they would open. And one of them opened for the weekend. I was the first show, and I think 2 weeks later it had to shut down again. So I was like, yes, I finally got to play a comedy club. But it was a lot of fun to just go in there in that little intimate setting. Because, you know, I went from playing schools and fairs to suddenly headlining in Vegas. And so so it was really a lot of fun to get in that little intimate space and make people laugh.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because I know you did what you could do over the course of the last year. I'm not sure if you did any like virtual show type of stuff, but it must have been a big change to get back in those small rooms for even just a night or two.
It was, and it was not a bad change. It was a really fun change. You know, the thing about the virtual shows is we kept looking at it. A lot of people were requesting them, but we just felt like that, you know, all of a sudden it kind of happened at the same time where everybody was doing virtual shows. And we kind of thought, you know, we don't want to just get lost in the mix. Let's just kind of hold off on this. I decided, because if you come to my show, you'll notice that almost all my songs are a verse and a chorus. And I've been doing that since 2005, 2004. I've been doing verses and chorus. And I really miss singing a full length song. So what I decided to do is once a week release a video of me and the puppets doing a full song, all the whole thing, the lead and everything. And boy, it's been a lot of fun. So I'm going to continue that tradition up as long as I can until, you know, if my work schedule gets too hard, I might have to skip a week or two. But my goal is to try to put out at least one, if I can, put out a video a week of me doing that. And you can find that on my YouTube. It's youtube.com/ Terry Fader. And see those also on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter.
Yeah, I wonder with you, because I know that you've throughout your entire career, certainly in Las Vegas, you're always tinkering with the show. You change, you're kind of notorious for making quite a few changes every year, every few months sometimes. So having all this downtime, I wanted to ask how that affected your creative process, and if you've kind of maybe started some new habits or learned some new things about yourself and your performance style that we're going to see in this new show.
Yeah. I mean, part of it is I've had a lot of people that really enjoyed the, some of the full length videos. And so I'm trying to figure out what my creative process did was say, am I utilizing myself to my full potential of the different things I can do? One of the things that people say a lot is you do such good impressions and you can sing. Why do you use the puppets? And it's like, well, because I can. So I'm going to be doing some showcasing of the multiple different voices that I'm able to do without getting too boring. I mean, the last thing I want to do is to go in and do, my show at New York and have people say, wow, we got to hear, seven songs. That wasn't much of a show. So I like to get in there and put, 30 or 40 songs in there and get lots and lots of different things in there. But I am going to take a little bit of time to showcase what I'm capable of without puppets. And it's way, way harder to do impressions of singers without moving your lips. I can tell you right now. I mean, one time I was doing this sound check, and I was doing it with I had never actually sung the song At Last by Etta James with my lips moving. I had started it from the very beginning. I started working on it without moving my lips. So one day I was doing a sound check, and I just decided I was going to do the sound check without a puppet. So I walk up to the mic and I went, "At last, my love has come along." And I went, wow, that was way easier with my lips moving. And so I really had not noticed how much harder it was to do these impressions without my lips moving. But for me, it's whimsical. It makes it a lot more fun. You know, there's a lot of people out there that can do singing impressions. There's a lot of people out there that can do impressions. But to my knowledge, I'm the only one that can do it without moving my lips and make it look like a puppet's doing it. So it kind of gives a thing where if you want to see that, you're going to have to see it at my show.
It seems like great timing to get back on stage in Vegas because the, let's say, troublesome 25-foot rule was just tossed out a few days ago. So now you don't have to worry about when you open your show, you don't have to worry about that big distance that was previously required between the stage and the audience. I think, I'm very familiar with that theater at New York, New York. I think that's going to make a big difference for your show there.
Oh, I think so too. And it was, when we went in, the last time we went in, we were doing kind of a walkthrough of the room and kind of saying, okay, here's where the screen needs to be and here's where my monitors need to be, et cetera, et cetera. Oh my gosh, it just felt like I was so far from the first, from the front rows. And it is still troublesome, the fact that we can only have, 250 people in the room. It's a room that holds, 1,400 people. And when they're all spread out like that, it's frustrating because I realize coronavirus is contagious, but so is laughter. And so when you are near other people who are laughing, it tends to make you laugh harder and longer and want to. there's an electricity when there's a full crowd. It's just, there's just no doubt about it. Any entertainer will tell you that there's a different electricity when you've got a lot of people in a room, which is what's so frustrating is when I was doing the comedy clubs, yeah, they were having to social distance, but they were such small spaces that you still had pretty much a full crowd. I mean, you could, you know, they had each table at 6 feet apart, but it's not, each table might have 4 to 6 people at it. So you had a big group here and a big group here. Now, for me, it's not going to be as ridiculous as it might be for another entertainer who's been doing this for, well, you know, I guess I've been doing it for a while in Vegas. But when I was young, I would always bring my puppets in my, my puppets were almost always in the trunk of my car. And if we got together with friends or whatever, I'd be like, do you guys want me to do a show? And I would pull my puppets out of the trunk. So I would perform for 10 people or 8 people or whatever. So, so I love to perform and I love to make a connection with the audience. And it will be more difficult to make a connection with an audience when they're only in blocks of 4 and they're scattered all over the theater. But I think they're going to really still, I'll still be able to make that connection because really, for me, the show is all about my audience. It's all about my audience having a good time. So
your show always has had that kind of quality because of the music, because it mixes music with comedy and other things. You making that connection with the audience is just the biggest part of what you do, it seems like.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. And some people do this to be rich. Some people do it to be famous. I mean, entertain. I've never really done it for any other reason other than the love of the audience and the and just wanting to, you know, I've had this burning desire inside since I was a kid to make people overcome their problems, if only for 20 minutes or 30 minutes. You know, I was always that guy that when someone was hurting, I was the guy that would go in and try to bring some levity and laughter into a difficult situation. I remember I had a friend when I was maybe 12, whose mother had just passed away from cancer. And you know, as a young kid, as a 12-year-old trying to figure out how do I make this my friend feel better. And so we just, I spent a lot of time with him just making him laugh. And I think that's just ingrained in me, is to give people this small amount of time for them to forget their problems, for them to forget that, you know, things might be difficult at home or they might be going through a divorce or whatever it is, and make them laugh. And so, so I'm really driven by that. That's why I get on stage and do what I do. And so it's going to be a blast to get back on stage and start doing that again, try to make that personal connection.
Yeah. I'm sure it's going to feel great. And there's going to be a lot of relief when you do that first show back. So what can we expect from this show? You know, how new is it? How many of our familiar favorites, signature songs and characters are coming back, and how much new stuff are we going to see?
Well, it's going to be a lot of new stuff. The format of the show is completely different than anything I've done before. And we're kind of doing a whimsical origin story of delving into the psychiatry of a ventriloquist. And it's called Who's the Dummy Now is the name of the show. And we're sort of showing this interesting connection of how and why I created different characters and how they came out of either a certain part of my personality or perhaps someone that influenced me or that I met along the way in, you know, whether it's a good influence or a bad influence. And just trying to figure out, like, for example, my annoying neighbor, Dougie, who is the stoner, and he's the guy that's always, you know, dude, I just scored some weed, you know. And he's really based on a friend of mine from high school that he was the guy everybody, you know, scored their weed from. I actually never did drugs ever in high school. And man, I was too scared. My parents would have killed me if they had ever found out. So I was too afraid to kind of go down that path. But, you know, I did have the friends who were kind of that. And so my brain just kind of went when I got older and I thought, well, wouldn't it be funny if that guy, because the guy that was my friend, he actually turned into a very successful businessman who every time I saw him after when he was in his 30s and 40s was he was wearing a suit and a tie. And I thought, well, what if he didn't? What if he was the exact same guy in his 40s that he was when we were 16? And so that's where Dougie came from. And so that's really really kind of this origin story through the puppets and through music and singing of how I sort of created all these different personalities and characters out of events from my life or people that I met in my life.
It sounds like a lot of fun. It also sounds like maybe it was, you know, inspired by having a lot of downtime. You know, did you kind of take a look at all the stuff in your repertoire and think about how you wanted to present these things in a new way because you were stuck at home like the rest of us?
I did. You know, that was kind of the thing was you look at being quarantined and I go, well, geez, you know, I'm never alone. It's like you think of that. What was the Tom Hanks movie where he was stranded on an island?
Castaway.
So it's like I when I was watching that movie years ago, I remember thinking, well, I wouldn't be too hard. I'd just create a bunch of characters and I would sit there and be able to have conversations, you know, with these characters. So it was a little bit of Castaway where you're just kind of going through. And it's funny. I don't really talk to my characters unless I'm either writing a routine or rehearsing a routine or recording one of my weekly videos. But it is kind of interesting to think that that I delved myself into the creation of characters. Another thing was that my parents had a janitorial business, and they had us working full-time hours during the day. We would go to school, and in the summer, we would just work all the time. And during the day, we would go to school. As soon as school was out, my parents would pick us up. They would drop me and my brother and my sister, and we're talking like 12, 13, 12, 15, and 16, and they would drop us off at a building, and we would have to clean until 11 o'clock or midnight. And then we'd go home, and we would sleep and go back to school. And so during this time of difficulty, I spent in this fantasy world where I was creating characters and I was writing routines because in my mind, I wanted to be an entertainer and I wanted to be a ventriloquist. So I kind of began to create all these different characters to while away the drudgery of having to work 8 hours after school every day. And so it was really just kind of one of those things. And that's what the Who's the Dummy Now, this show kind of brings into is how I was able to skew all of these different characters out of the drudgery of life and make life more exciting, even if it was only for a fantasy time.
Well, what else would you like to say to all of your many fans and followers who are just excited as you are to see you perform again in Vegas very soon?
Oh man, I just want you to do all my fans to know that I truly do this for you. And it means so much to me when I get the feedback. And it's great to get feedback when you do a YouTube video or a Facebook video, but it's just not the same as looking out at someone and seeing that smile and seeing that laugh and knowing that you're, you know, one of my favorite things though is when one of my puppets goes into an impression. And I love seeing people gasp because they're just like, wow. And I think the best compliment I ever got ever, and I get this on a regular basis, is when I sing a song by myself, and I do occasionally in the show, I don't do a lot of it. But after the show, people will say, I had no idea you could sing. And I'm like, that's the best compliment anyone could give me because that's all my puppets do is sing. All of my puppets sing. And if you don't realize that I'm the one doing it, then that means I'm doing my job just the way I was supposed to do it. You need to believe that those characters are real. And I want them to be real for you. And if they can lift you up out of a dark place or just brighten your day, then you know what? I accomplished what I set out to accomplish.
All right, let's get into what you need to see and hear and enjoy this weekend in Las Vegas Live Entertainment. We're still about a week away from those strip reopenings, but there's plenty of other stuff to keep you busy in the next few days. The one and only Eric Jordan Young, my guest on last week's show, will be at The Space on Saturday with his original concert show featuring pianist Philip Fortenberry. That's at 6 p.m. Saturday, and you can live stream it or get a ticket if there's any left at thespacelv.com. One of the hottest shows on the Strip, and also the one that's been back up and running the longest, is also a show that will benefit from the reduction of that stage setback rule. It's X Country at Harris Cabaret. It's performed nightly except Tuesday and Wednesday, and now it can sell more tickets and seat you closer to the stage, so it'll be an even better experience. Go to harrislasvegas.com for info. And last, Michael Monge, who you probably know from the Lounge at Encore, where he's been playing for years, is doing a Sunday dinner show at the Italian American Club on East Sahara Avenue.
go to IACVegas.com for more info on that one. That's a wrap for this week's show. Special thanks and congratulations to Terry Fader. Don't forget, he's back on the Strip starting on March 18th at New York Hotel and Casino. You can find past episodes of The Sun on the Strip at lasvegassun.com/podcasts. You can also listen and subscribe to The Sun on the Strip at Apple Podcasts. Thanks again for joining me. I'll see you here again next Wednesday. Take care.